Are Donald Trump's free speech rights being violated in that New York courtroom? Let's go to David Farenthold from the New York Times, who joins us every Tuesday. He's got yet another gag order against him, David, and he says that this is a complete violation of his First Amendment rights because he thinks the judge has a conflict of interest here. So who's right?
Well, again, my mother and you probably are disappointed that I didn't go to law school right now. but I think that the answer is that when you're in a courtroom, you don't have the same rights that you do walking down the street. And one of the rights you don't have is to insult the judge or to, you know, impugn the judge to, you know, you have to abide by gag rules. That happens to people all over the world and all over the country in legal proceedings, not just Donald Trump. And the reason that one of the reasons that they do that, they gag you from talking about the case outside the court, is that you now have a forum to talk about it inside the court. If Trump thinks that this judge is biased against him, there are ways to do that. He can file a motion in his court. He can appeal it to a higher court. You know, the answer to that is not just to post memes about the judge's daughter on social media. So, you know, the idea that a gag order or something special, you know, just for Trump or some special restriction of his First Amendment rights, just not how the court works.
But can he reasonably argue that he's being held to a different standard simply because he's immensely famous and there are sometimes crazy people who will act on his tweets? Whereas, you know, if you or I are in court and we tweeted something negative, I don't know about you, I have pretty much zero followers, you know, there wouldn't be any consequences to it.
I think that is right. I think that maybe he would get more scrutiny because he has an army of people who have been shown to attack the Capitol, for instance, when he tells them to. So I think that's part of it. But even if he wasn't, I think, you know, if he was out in public attacking the judge or, you know, posting, you know, sort of doxing the judge or his family, I think you'd get a gag order whether he had a lot of Twitter followers or almost none.
Okay, he on the bond issue, he's made his bond, and he still faces a much larger one. But what I want to ask you about was this whole Truth Social thing. For a moment, it looked like he'd pulled a rabbit out of a hat. Truth Social went public, and he was suddenly a billionaire. And then I guess it took a turn, and the stories this morning are saying that it has lost $3 billion in value. So does that mean that the payday is over?
Well, he has, at least according to the terms of the merger, they could change them, but at least according to the terms of the merger, he can't sell his Truth Social stocks for 6 months after the merger closed, which was last week. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for him, these are all paper gains and paper losses until he can sell. That said, the Truth Social is a terrible business. They just put out sort of an update yesterday saying that they'd lost millions and millions of dollars in 2023 after losing millions and millions in 2022. They have very little revenue. It's hard to make a living, you know, running a Twitter clone when Twitter exists. And even Twitter's having problems. So it's just not a great business. And I think the more time goes on, this may become less of sort of a meme stock where you just buy it to sort of say how much you love Trump, and more of a stock where it just, you know, has to depend on the success of the business. And if it becomes the latter, then Truth Social may be in trouble.
Right. Now, on that meme stock thing where you buy it just to show support for somebody, he's got some pretty rich supporters who can afford to do that. And I'm just curious where the initial demand for that stock was coming from. Was it from his followers or was it from his wealthy allies?
I think it was a mix. So I do think a lot of it was just regular people who love Donald Trump and, you know, sort of either they wanted to show their support for Trump or, you know, it was like GameStop, you remember, like even if they don't think that the stock has any underlying value, they think some other guy is going to pay for it. So they'll buy it so they can sell it to that guy. You know, it became something that, you know, was sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more it went up, people bought it. I do think there were also some rich people who bought it. There was this guy, Jeff Yass, who is like a big TikTok investor. So, you know, someone who was a never Trumper and now is supporting Trump. That guy has supposedly owned some of it too. I don't know. I think if you want to funnel money to Donald Trump, there's a lot of easier ways to do it than, you know, pumping up the value.
Well, that's what I was wondering. It seemed like a very clever way to funnel money to your preferred candidate without running afoul of campaign finance laws.
Yeah, but he owns a business. I feel like if there's a lot of other ways you could do a business transaction with Trump and give him a bunch of money that would be less complicated and probably would not involve the SEC.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you've been following the Florida abortion thing, but I just wanted to get your opinion on what's going on down there. There's been a series of rulings. It gets a little complicated, but the bottom line is that the voters in Florida are going to be voting on a constitutional amendment to basically protect abortion rights in Florida, and that's going to be on the ballot in November. So and I was seeing last night some Democrats saying, well, this is great. We are really glad to see this going to a vote in Florida because it helps us. How would that help Democrats?
Well, you know, the Florida Democratic Party is basically DOA, has been completely defunct for, you know, several years now. It's partly, you know, DeSantis and the state's turning right. DeSantis was a good politician, but the Florida Democrats have been awful. And I think they're hoping this is a lifeline because DeSantis, in his efforts to win the presidential nomination, signed this 6-week abortion ban in Florida, which is very unpopular in Florida. Mm-hmm. And that will be on the ballot in November. But I think there's a hope from Democrats that they can get out some of their voters to vote against this abortion ban, and they'll vote for Democratic candidates up and down the ballot. The analysis I was reading said that nobody thinks that Trump is going to lose Florida. He seems to have a lock on it, but that maybe it'll help in the race against Rick Scott and the senator who's running for re-election there, or some other races. You know, Florida Democrats would take any sort of lifeline, so I think they're happy for this.
I see. Because I thought I heard somebody sort of plant the idea that Florida was winnable for Democrats because of this.
It doesn't sound like Biden's going to spend a lot of time or money there. I think he sees other paths to victory. And it's an expensive state to advertise in. But, you know, I guess maybe if polling really changes that, Biden could invest. But for now, it doesn't seem like Biden is thinking of it as winnable for him.
Yeah. One more thing. The Texas border, I haven't heard much about it lately. Is the crisis still going on there or not?
I think it has lessened a little bit. But, it seems like the sort of biggest rush is over, or maybe is moving to other states.
Mm. David Farenthold from The New York Times. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey!
Choke points.
Let's go.
As promised, roundabouts 101. We've done this before, but we're going to keep doing it till we get it right. Here's Chris.
And that's because people continue to have difficulty with roundabouts. I'm not sure why. They really are not that difficult. My best guess is that because they are somewhat new to the Pacific Northwest, like last 15 years or so, and drivers really don't have as much experience with them as you might expect. So why am I bringing this up again? Well, overwhelming demand on the text line and from MyNorthwest.com after last week's choke point on the roundabouts coming to North 145th Street on either side of I-5 in North Seattle. Construction on them began last night, and the city of Shoreline's Eric Bratton expects a learning curve when they open in 7 months.
Whenever you go into a roundabout, there is a roadmap for you and signage to tell you what lane you need to be in for wherever you want to go, and just make sure you look at that before you get into the roundabout. But we know that this is going to take some time for people to get used to.
And Eric hit on the key to really understanding and navigating roundabouts. Just follow the signs. But even before that, I recommend that you know where you need to go before getting to the roundabout. That way you will put yourself in the best possible position. So let's start with single lane roundabouts. That's where only one lane goes around, right? And we'll get to doubles in a minute. They're quite easy to understand, and I'm going to be using some fun sound from the Washington Department of Transportation's video on how to drive them that you can find at MyNorthwest.com. Rule number one, cars in the roundabout always have the right-of-way.
Traffic that is inside the roundabout has the right-of-way. Drivers entering the roundabout must yield to vehicles already inside. Look left, as traffic always moves counterclockwise.
And that last one sounds simple, but I have seen people trying to take a left entering the roundabout, which I don't understand. That is a no-no. Traffic always goes counterclockwise. Do not take a left. Not a good idea. Now, I think it's the double roundabouts where I think most people get confused and get anxious, but they really aren't that much different. You must still yield to traffic already in the roundabout, but here is where knowing where you want to go is the most important point, because you have to pick your lane before you enter the roundabout, so you need to know where you're really trying to go. So back to the video for a moment.
As a rule of thumb, to turn right, be in the right lane. To turn left, be in the left lane. Straight is usually either lane, but check the signs to be sure.
So basically, just pick the lane that the sign says you want to go. If you want it to go around 3/4 of the roundabout to take that left, you need to be in that inside lane, the left lane. Don't make your decision in the middle of the roundabout, because it's illegal to cross lanes or to change lanes in the middle of a roundabout. It's also really, really dangerous. Now, I also get a lot of questions about sharing roundabouts with big rigs, especially down near 70th, where they put it in near Wapato Way coming out of the Port of Tacoma. Truck drivers also plead with me daily to tell other drivers not in trucks to give them plenty of room.
Keep a safe distance behind trucks or large vehicles. Freight trucks are allowed to use both lanes prior to entering the roundabout, while driving inside the roundabout, and for a short while after exiting. Sometimes, trucks use the edges of the center island to maneuver. That's okay, as the center island is designed to help. Do not pass a truck in a roundabout. It is very dangerous.
My best advice is to let the trucks go through solo. It's just a lot safer. And then this question comes up a lot, too. What happens if you're approaching or if you're in a roundabout when an ambulance or fire truck comes up behind you? Where exactly do you pull over? I'll give you a hint. It's not in the roundabout.
If an emergency vehicle approaches, drive through the roundabout and pull over just like you would at any other intersection.
So, I hope this helps. Most important, yield to the left, right? To people coming who are already inside the roundabout. Don't just sit there and hang out either. Yield doesn't mean wait for no one to be in the roundabout. It just means when there's an open space, use it. But yield to people who are all the way in there. Roundabouts are not going away. In fact, they're being used more and more to eliminate T-bone crashes and other issues at intersections. Some cities are getting rid of their signalized intersections entirely and replacing them with roundabouts because they are safer and they do move people around a lot faster. So don't get freaked out. Follow the signs. Follow the rules. And it should be easy. It should be fine.
Yeah, they do work pretty well. I mean,
yeah, they do.
It's genius. It's a way of basically eliminating left turns. So
correct.
Every turn out of a roundabout is going to be a right turn, even where before it was a left turn. And so you
that
don't have
correct.
To cross traffic.
Yeah, it's like, two wrongs don't make a right. Three rights make a left.
That's right.
it's just simple. But I think it's the doubles that confuse people as they don't realize exactly. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to take a left, be in the left lane. I mean, it's pretty basic, but I think people who aren't used to them, they come upon them and like, and then after that, I think the fire, the emergency vehicle one is a good one, too. It's
that
like,
is
where do you stop? It's like, get through it first and then pull over. I think that's one that I think is vital that maybe not
help.
Most people think about.
This morning's guest commentary at 7:35 is from Cairo News Radio's Paul Holden on the importance of solitude. Let's get back to our in-depth look at We Heart Seattle, a nonprofit organization which has taken it upon itself to clean up homeless encampments in the city. Cairo News Radio's Sam Campbell is here. He's been looking into the group and has a first-of-its-kind exclusive video special entitled In Plain Sight at MyNorthwest.com. So, first of all, give us the backstory. Why did you decide to take a closer look at We Heart Seattle?
Well, Dave, as you know, on January 8th, there was human remains found on a green space at 4th and Dexter Avenue here in Seattle. And as it turns out, it wasn't some city crew that found these human remains. They were volunteers with We Heart Seattle. And those volunteers found the remains. They called police. Then they came back to that same site. A couple weeks later, I went back out with them. Because I wanted to see exactly, this site where they made this grim discovery and get a better understanding of what they do. But while I was digging into this, I found that there are a lot of people in Seattle who don't agree with the way that We Heart Seattle handles what it calls trash picks. In other words, going into homeless encampments, sometimes bargaining with the people living there, saying, hey, we can try and help find you some kind of housing or just move along and we'll throw away this, what they deem to be trash. And so a lot of people in Seattle don't agree with that. That's what we talk about in part two of my series, In Plain Sight. In part one, we went over a lot of the context. And all of that is, of course, up on MyNorthwest.com and the Cairo News Radio YouTube. But in part two, I talk with some of the people who I've met independently from social media, as well as, some of those highly critical websites. Like one man, William Hughes, he lived under the Ship Canal Bridge for 2 years, and apparently he's had run-ins with We Heart Seattle and Andrea Suarez before. Here's a little clip from my video.
And then she walks by this one tent, she goes, wow, that tent is, and just steps on it and like says, yeah, that's trash. And it was our friend's tent. He wasn't there for a couple days because he had to go do some things. But he lived there, and his stuff was in there. And she said, it looks like trash to me. Right in my guy's face. I thought, that's somebody's friend's tent you just crushed like that.
Compared to groups like, I don't know if you know Just Cares, or compared to other groups that are contracted with KCRHA, how would you compare those groups with We Heart Seattle?
They have accountability. Bottom line.
Might help if I turn on my mic. So you can hear Hughes there saying that someone, in fact, Suarez, Andrea Suarez, the founder of We Heart Seattle, had allegedly stepped on and squished a tent right in front of him. And that's what he claims, among other things. Now, in the video, I go on to talk with other activists as well as homelessness advocates in the city. Two of them, Alicia Ramirez and Aiden Carroll, I talk with next. But it's this same lack of affiliation with local government that worries some advocates and activists.
But when, like, Reach and Lead will go out and do... when they'll go out and do outreach, these are trained social workers that are also, you know, they're also coming along. So they have the training and knowledge to make that harm less impactful, if that makes sense. I don't think anyone on Andrea's board, including Andrea herself, has any prior experience with that. No one is a trained social worker. I mean, there are some things that you can do that you don't necessarily need to be to, you know, go to college and get a degree for. But if with casework especially, it's not just something you can go around and say, I'm a social worker or I'm a caseworker, and that has happened in the past.
It's hard enough to trust anybody in the situations many people are in. And I know outreach workers have to spend a lot of effort in some cases demonstrating that they're sincere, and it's a real issue. It's creating more barriers.
So some of the critics that mentioned the Reach program, which had formerly trained social workers out with them when they go to encampments, does Andrea and We Heart Seattle do they have trained workers with them?
Now, that came up when we were talking. I asked how Suarez chooses which camps for what she calls cleanups. So she said her organization gets these tips. Sometimes they scout ahead doing what they call welfare checks. So then I asked, when you're doing those welfare checks, are you bringing caseworkers with you?
We are caseworkers. Tim and I are caseworkers. We've been doing this for 3.5 years. We've been through trauma-informed care training, de-escalation training, on-the-job training. My educators are the 200 people and the thousands of homeless that we've met right here on the slopes that have said, you guys are game changers.
But in terms of, like, you know, state or city license for caseworking?
I don't know. Did Jesus Christ have a license?
She pulled that one on you too, huh? And I'm a clergy, you know, and I love Jesus just as next to the person, but, you know, don't pull that one in and for what you're doing, because that wasn't Jesus wouldn't do the things I've seen her do.
Now you can hear Hughes at the end of that clip.
And who is Hughes again?
Hughes is the homeless man who I met who lived under the Ship Canal Bridge for 2 years. Okay. He says he's had these negative...
Yeah, she doesn't respond to criticism well, does she?
So she did when I asked specifically about it. Now Hughes, of course, you know, has his own criticisms, but, you know, he says that across the entire homelessness community in Seattle, We Heart Seattle has this poor reputation, with some camps even putting up signs saying We Heart Seattle is not welcome here.
Is it possible the poor reputation comes from how the work is done? Maybe it is not as sensitive as some would like, but she's getting it done?
She has described it as tough love before.
Yeah, I mean, we've interviewed her, Dave and I, and she does deploy tough love because she wants something done rather than bringing everyone to the table and discussing it to death. And so I wonder if some of the criticism is just because we're not used to tough love around here.
Well, most of the criticism that I've run into has been centered on these specific alleged incidents where they say that either We Heart Seattle volunteers misrepresent themselves or they destroy homeless people's belongings without permission. Now, I asked Suarez, in fairness, you know, can she respond to these criticisms? Here's what she had to say.
It's manufactured controversy on some random website. Even people who are out here living rough are like, I read that, and it's like, yeah, it sounds like some woman has it after you. Like, it's just a middle school playground set of accusations. It has nothing to do with the real work we're doing. Anybody that comes out here and volunteers from us, if anything, thank you for the publicity haters, because, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. And if you're not out here with us, then you have no right having any opinion there or otherwise about what we're doing, because you don't know. And we've saved lives, we've created lives, we've created jobs, we've restored green spaces. And frankly, I think we have become unassailable. They've quieted way down.
What about the city? Does the city try to shut her down?
Not that I know of. Basically,
they seem to like her work.
You know, they have had a long history of kind of pushing her out of coordination for broad homelessness outreach, but it looks like that's changing.
Mm.
With five of the new city council members, she says, having gone out and been on the ground with her at these so-called trash cleanups. So,
well, I mean, this is on public property. Yeah. You have a right to walk up to a homeless person, pull up and say, "Do you want some help?"
Correct. We're right. talking. So then. The critics are then talking about the difference between legality and ethics, right? And so I'm not a lawyer, Dave. So this is public property. But what I would say is that these critics think that it's wrong if that's true, that these volunteers are going in there and, you know,
just trashing tents,
destroying people's belongings without purpose. But you know, We Heart Seattle, Andrea Suarez, she denies those claims.
And so part one, part two, up at MyNorthwest.com and the Cairo News Radio YouTube page, where you went on the ground, Sam. You've got video. Look at that. Radio turning into video. How exciting. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some of it. Great work. We have part three tomorrow. What's that about?
Part three is going to wrap all of this in context. So we are going to examine a little bit of the charges. There's an official criminal case against We Heart Seattle's former board president. That's in Oregon. We'll talk about that. We'll also hear from a homeless man who now volunteers with We Heart Seattle, and he says it's because of their organization that he's back on track.
Well, there you go. Sam Campbell. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Kelly.
Producer's a tough gig. You deserve the break. Thanks for that, Paul. Daily Dose of Kindness brought to you by Heritage Homecraft. An internet post sparked a movement in kindness. CBS's David Begno has the story.
When you see Lynn's story, what you don't see is her Texas-sized heart. This 64-year-old Fort Worth retiree had a lot of free time on her hands until she met April Goodwin.
I had no transportation, and I didn't know what to do.
She found help on the community app Next Door after revealing to strangers that she had been diagnosed with uterine cancer.
Someone spoke up and said, I'll take you to your appointments. And I kind of ignored it because it's a stranger. What do you do? So she messaged me again and said, I'll take you. I mean it. I'm honest. I'm sincere.
Over the last year, Lynn has driven April to more than 25 radiation appointments, 6 chemotherapy treatments, and countless doctor's visits. Rain or shine, Lynn is always on time.
One time her car broke down and she goes and flags down somebody in the middle of traffic to get me into my chemo.
That's Lynn. Well, months after meeting April, Lynn again was on the Next Door app when she noticed a post from Kevin Horrigan, who is legally blind.
Lynn's like a little angel. She really is. Because I can't drive.
So I thought, well, I can drive there and take him to work and then go home.
See you tomorrow.
Hard times drove Kevin out of retirement.
Bye.
Now Lynn lessens his burdens.
Lynn drives me to work or she picks me up from work. It helps tremendously.
The best way for me to feel good is to help other people feel good.
Yes.
Just to make it easier for them.
Yes, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the joy, isn't it?
Yes.
That's the joy.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first thing that led to what has been the kindness that you've done? What does this go back to?
I don't know. It's just always been important to me to be nice to people and to not hurt people's feelings.
That is David Begno. It's a 7-minute feature on this incredible woman, and they go back to a childhood incident that sparked her need for kindness. I would highly recommend the entire feature.
And now, from the Gian Ursula Show, it starts at 9. Here's G. Scott, basketball fan.
Man!
Was it good?
Oh!
Was it as good as you hyped it up to be?
Yes. No. Yes, it was. Let me explain. I made it. I did all my errands, ran everything. I got home. and I was right on my couch, ready to go at 4 o'clock. I don't know how, if you don't know if you time your day, just give me a second, y'all. You time your day, you do everything you're supposed to, because your plan is you want to do this at this time. And I don't know, the older you get, when everything goes according to plan, and I sat down, Colleen,
did you
my
seat. When you sat down? Get cozy with a blanket.
It was 3:59. I had my snack and everything. Okay, probably too much information. Anyways.
No, I agree with you. When you can check things off your to-do list and get a little treat.
Yes.
It's a good day.
So the game's getting ready to start, right, Dave? So we got this game. We got the Iowa and we got LSU. It is the rematch of last year's national championship game. The first quarter starts and it's threes, 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 threes. I mean, everybody's on fire. And it's like, ooh, and all my buddies are text messaging back and forth. Iowa jumps out to a big lead in the first quarter. And then here comes LSU. They come back at halftime. You got LSU is up by 4. And it just back and forth. And then that gal, Caitlin Clark, from Iowa, she had 41 points. She had 9 threes. She had 7 rebounds and 12 assists. I mean, Dave, she was hot, on fire.
So this idea that women's basketball without dunking is unwatchable, that's a lie?
I'm willing to bet that the person that says that is not an athlete themselves. And wasn't.
That's what I've always heard, and yet I see you here almost out of your seat talking about this game. I'm sad I missed it.
It was so good. So, yeah, Iowa, they won that game. It was great battle, great things going on. And then the next game is UConn and USC. That game goes halftime. It's tie game. And it's just everything. USC ends up losing that game. Paige Beckers for UConn was just too much for USC. USC has Juju Watkins. And so I'm probably too excited to be talking about this. But let me just say this. Iowa beats LSU. And you have UConn that beats USC. The pregame was women, and they were talking about the game and analytics and what to look forward to. Commentators. Beautiful. The commercials. You had Caitlin Clark all in Gatorade commercials and Nike nice. Commercials, and you're just seeing all of the name, image, likeness, and all of the money. And it's like, oh, so it doesn't just have to be coaches getting these endorsements. You mean to tell me you can have the student athletes make money too? That part of it was beautiful. Nice. Last year for the national championship game, there was like 9.5 million that watched the game. They believe that it would be over 10 nice. That watched the game yesterday. It was all that and more.
Like, so then it's UConn and Iowa going to the next
round. To the next level, and then and then NC State and South Carolina. So the final four. I'm warning y'all right now. I'm going to be this excited again because the Final Four is going to be dang good, y'all.
Well, thank you for giving it the media coverage it deserves and celebrating these women. It's about time.
Dave, you can see text message, bro. Me and my partner's going back and forth. That's all we're talking about.
I'm just amazed that you can handle basketball with no dunking.
Wait a minute. Can you handle the ballet with no dunking?
Huh?
Yeah, what would you go, oh, that's not ballet?
What would make you say something like that? That's not ballet.
If they got up there and started tap dancing.
Oh, okay. That would not be ballet, right? It would be tap dancing is what it would be.
You're supposed to be up on your toes.
Yeah.
I like watching people that can tap dance. Yeah, I do. Can you tap dance?
But it's not. No.
We've got so many road trips for you guys to go on. We got to get you guys to the ballet. We got to get you to Vegas.
That's right.
Like G can take you into his world, and you can take G into your world. It would be a hit video series.
Here's the thing. We have the content here.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if the people upstairs were like, oh, I have this great idea. What if we have Dave Ross and G Scott go on the road and we have cameras in there?
It would just be beautiful.
Who wouldn't watch that? Text in right now if you would watch that series.
I would watch that.
Sully, would you watch, bro?
Yo, totally. Yeah.
Because I can't dunk and he can.
I'm not.
Not anymore. Are you kidding me? I'm old, Dave. Yeah.
I've never dunked.
You're old. Did you find out about that Nelly song?
No, I didn't find it.
Getting hot in here? We'll have to play it for him.
All right.
Let's see. I got 99 problems. Never mind.
Oh, he knows that one.
754.
Not Nelly, but real, close.
I know. That's Mickey time. We are 13 days from the tax deadline, and somebody tried to scam you?
Oh, yeah. This was years ago when I was working in music radio. Mm-hmm. We all had a guy that did our taxes, and everyone was oh, my God, I got like $20,000 back in a refund. And I'm like, what?
Too good to be true.
Like, right.
Probably is.
But everyone used him. So I used him. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward, come 2018, we found out that he was a scammer.
What did he do?
Well, he scammed everybody. He did things that he shouldn't have done. And he had write-offs that shouldn't have been write-offs. He actually went to court. If I gave you his name, you could Google and you would find it. But we all went looking for him because he stopped returning phone calls.
Did you lose money in this?
I ended up owing $20,000 in taxes, yes.
So, in other words, he didn't know what he was doing and just filed your taxes wrong and you got dinged by the IRS?
We got dinged hard.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, do your homework. Washington is 7 when it comes
the homework
to
is
online
if somebody
tax
says,
scams.
Yeah, I got a guy.
I got a guy. I mean, well, listen. In my family, that's a good thing. Oh, you need that? I got a guy. Just don't ask. But I got a guy. No. Almost 600 victims in Washington lost more than $15 million to people pretending to be from the IRS last year.
Oh, my goodness.
That's according to some data that we got here. California ranked number one. People lost more than $88 million. Kansas number 3 with 44. Florida with 21. So the most common tax scams are the turbo tax scam. It comes in the form of an email where someone is asking you to update your banking information. People see it. Oh, they log on. They think, oh, this is legit. And then they get their banking information and then boom. Next one is a fake accountant, which is what happened to me. Someone pretending to be a CPA who promises unusually high refund returns. So don't follow the gang if they say, I got a guy and I'm getting high returns. Okay.
Well, how do you know if somebody's legit? They could show you a license that they printed out that's fake.
Do a simple Google search.
Business Bureau or something?
Absolutely. Go to the Better Business Bureau because chances are there's going to be other people who've been scammed and they're going to report it. IRS phone calls from scammers saying you owe and that you're going to end up with a lien on property or seize your bank accounts. And people are like, no. And they say, well, you pay this now and we'll stop the lien. Well, just so you know, the IRS will never phone call you.
No.
They'll never call you. Right. They'll send you a letter with a code so that way you can call in. Also, the employee retention credit. This is another big one. This is a big scam. The ERC, we know it's a tax credit for businesses that retained employees during COVID, right? Well, scammers are going to post. They're posting ads on social media. They're claiming that they can help you. They can even help those who are not eligible. Hello, that should be a red flag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you fall for that, then you could be the victim
of a scam.
They're
starting to enforce that now. And a lot of people are finding out that they didn't fill out the forms the right way.
Exactly. Yeah. So make sure you're using a trusted tax preparer. Don't fall victim. If you have fallen victim, you have to report it. Please report it to the Treasury Inspector General Administration or the Federal Trades Commission.
Yeah. And also check your, bank account from time to time, like every other day.
I check it every day and I have alerts. I mean, if I have a deposit, if I have a debit, if I have anything, I get alerts from my phone.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, if you hand out your bank number to the wrong person, that's bad.
Yes, it is. One time my wife was shopping and she spent $500 and I got the alert and it said, is this fraud? And I was about to hit yes.
Yeah.
And I called and I said, where are you? She said, I'm at Target. Why? I went, oh, wait. $500 at Target? What? But at any rate,
That's easy to do. It's easy to do.
Well, tell me about it.
It's better to get into a one-day argument than lose all your money.
This is very, very true.
Yeah.
She went in for Tide.
Tide?
That always happens.
She went in for Tide.
How much does that cost?
$500, apparently, and a pillow and a lamp.
Okay. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News.
You can hear us live every morning on 97.3 FM or subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss the show.